dream away on the good ship Lollipop.
I was tied to a chair. My hands were bound behind my back. My feet were tied. I saw my hat across the room. It was some sort of empty cabin with no windows and a fireplace on one end. A lit candlestick was in each corner. There was another room on the other side. I saw a door in that room. The floor was filthy. I could hear voices outside, but I couldn't tell who they were. Oh. My mouth felt numb. My head was ringing. When I leaned back in the chair, I felt something sharp push against me. Part of the wooden chair back was broken off in a giant splinter. If I could pick my hands up far enough, I might be able to loosen or even cut the ropes that were tying me together. It might also break my shoulders. I worked furiously. I managed to loosen the ropes enough to slip my hands through. Then I loosened them around my feet too. But I had no gun. What plays could I make? I heard voices coming. I slipped my hands back into the ropes and slumped my head like I was still knocked out. Three men entered. It was Benny Chance, his bodyguard Gus, and that damn hotel clerk.
Before we get rid of him, Gus, let's see how much he knows. Wake him up. He's been out long enough.
Gus walked over. He got close enough for me to smell his bad breath. I wanted to bite his scarred face as hard as I could. He placed something under my nose that made my nostrils burn, and I opened my eyes with a
pinch. Smelling salts always do the trick.
Wake up, Marlowe. You've reached your final hour.
I looked up at the three of them. They were wearing garbage bags. Gus had a cross-cut saw in one hand. The hotel clerk had the broken piece of the wooden chair.
Marlowe, you should have taken the money and walked. But you're only half smart. That makes you half stupid. Now you're all stupid.
The hotel clerk hit me with a straight right. I tried to shake it off, but before I could, he hit me again.
Who's the boxer now, Marlowe? Who's the boxer now?
I spit out a mouthful of blood and tried to keep my eyes open.
How's the new highway project, Benny? Things must be really desperate for you to do your own hatchet work.
Don't flatter yourself, Marlowe. You're small potatoes. None of your assumptions matter now. What does matter is the answers you give me. If I don't like them, Gus here is going to cut off a toe for every answer I think is wrong. Where's Janice Tomlinson? Marlowe, I said, where is Janice Tomlinson?
She was gone when I came back to my hotel room this afternoon. I have no idea where she went. My room was unlocked and the few things she had with her were gone.
When did she come to see you at your hotel room?
This morning around 4. I was sleeping. She woke me up. She said that you and Moriarty made her come to my office. except that she messed up her lines and gave me a description of John Moriarty instead of the one of Paul Robard that she was supposed to.
What did Phillips tell you Moriarty was trying to do to him?
Phillips never mentioned Moriarty. Our conversation had to do with me purchasing a mine up here. I was trying to get some information out of him.
You're lying to me. Phillips told you exactly what was going on. He probably asked you for help. You're covering for him, Marlowe.
I didn't know what answer Benny was looking for. There was no point in trying to be tough. But if I was going to die here, I was going to take some of them with me. I slowly began to slide my hands outside of the rope.
Look, Benny. Phillips and I only spoke of mines that William Powell was trying to sell. Powell loves the radio. Phillips never mentioned you or anyone else.
Let's see what he knows, Gus.
Wait, boss. Can I hit him again?
Not now, Miles. It's Gus's turn. Go outside and wait for John.
Please.
I said not now, Miles. You've had your fun. Go outside and wait for John.
I can't wait to help you die, Shamus.
Okay, Gus. Go to work.
Sure thing, boss.
Gus came forward. As he did, he dropped his saw, and from behind his back, he pulled out my .38. He turned the gun towards Benny.
This is gonna be the prettiest case of murder-suicide ever, Shamus.
Why did you do
that?
He
shot Benny right in the head. He was still grinning at me as he fell into me, blood pouring out all over me from the wound.
Benny was always given orders. The losing orders. John agrees. Now I can get my piece. Just so as you know, I've been smiling for 2 days about that kid in the elevator. He begged for his life. Told me he'd do anything. And he did. And he got dead. And your friend Lou? He would have sold you up the river for the promise of heroin, let alone actually getting some. I got him too. Never even saw me coming. I'm nimble for a big fella, ain't I? Don't go nowhere, Dime Dick.
I quickly slid the ropes off my hands and feet. When I tried to stand, I almost fell over. The back of Benny's head was all over the floor. I practically crawled to the saw that Gus dropped. I heard him talking with someone. The voice sounded unfamiliar. The other man was yelling. I got to the wall on the right side of the doorway. I held my breath and gripped the saw tightly as I pressed myself back as far as I could. I could see his hulking shadow coming towards. Gus got to the doorway. I could almost feel his surprise at the empty chair I was sitting in. With the deepest devil inside of me, I swung that saw at his neck as hard as I could. It was like years of anger and self-pity came out of me all at once. Gus fell, gurgling. A watched them try to breathe. Then it stopped. No. I wasn't horrified. I pried my gun out of his hand. I tried my best to avoid stepping in the blood that was everywhere. I went over to my shoes and put them on. Then, slowly, I crept into the next room, towards the door. Holding my breath, I turned the knob. I saw no one out front as I crept into the moonlight.
That's far enough, Peeper.
I turned to see two men. They slowly encircled me. The hotel clerk was one. With him was another man. He was tall, with an athletic build, dark hair, and a dark mustache. I had been carrying around a picture of him in my wallet for almost a week.
Well, Marlowe, we finally meet.
John Moriarty was wearing a white shirt and dark pants with no tie. He had a .45 in his hand.
I want to stab him, John. I want to stab him.
Hey, Miles. Be quiet. As I was saying, thanks for being my stand-in, Marlowe. It'll be nice to put you out of your misery. Gus is a bright boy. He knows which hand is feeding him. Where is he? No matter. I'll deal with him after.
What was this all about?
The consolidation of power, Marlowe. My mind is salted. Paul Robard thought he was slick. He wasn't much of a man. And I made sure everyone knew it. The papers? They'll say him and my wife were tortured and killed for heroin money. Benny? Benny was running his club into the ground. I can run it better. He complains about a highway. Highway? I don't care about a fucking highway. I'll have those idiot tourists from New York and Chicago eating out of my palm while I fuck their wives in my office. And the best part? I'm not even here right now. I went missing last Wednesday, remember? Scared out of my mind. You and that whore sort of spreading that rumor. When they find you dead, they'll assume everyone died in a blaze of glory. Gus and I will be long gone. And that's not all, Marlowe. I have one final play. It's the biggest play of all. $500,000 worth of Union Pacific Railroad gold bars. And they'll be all mine. And what did you do with Janice Tomlinson? No sense in hiding her now. At least this way you two can have each other. I asked you a question, Shamus.
Are you sure you have the whole story sewn up tight? It's a lot of bodies to get rid of.
I'll worry about that. Your worries are about to be over. Too bad no one will care when you're gone. You're a nobody. You've never been a somebody. In 40 years, no one will even know the name Marlowe.
Moriarty pointed the gun towards my face.
Should have taken the money, Peeper. You live poor, you die poor.
I opened my eyes. I felt my body for holes. There were none. John Moriarty was on his knees holding his right hand, and there were three fingers blown off. I walked over to his 45 and picked it up, putting it in my pocket. From out of the shadows came two men like ghosts in the night.
Marlowe?
It was Henry Long and William T. Phillips.
Some shooting, Sundance. You still got it, you know that? You really still got it.
I always shot better when I moved, Butch. You know that.
How'd you fare, kid?
I'm alive. My ears and head are ringing. Manny Chance and Gus are both dead in the cabin.
Gus, dead?
Yeah, rich boy. I hit him across his throat with a cross-cut saw.
Hang on 1 second. That'll keep him quiet. I'll tie my tie around his hand to keep him from bleeding out.
Where are we?
Only about 3 miles out of town. Guys used to come out here to take heroin where the cops couldn't find them. We chased them off a few years ago. The cabin's been sitting mostly empty since.
Yeah, but how'd you find me?
I tailed you to Spokane. You left me a pretty easy trail to follow. While you were out this afternoon, I went up to your room and told your girlfriend Janice the full story. She's safe. Smart woman. You're lucky.
I think we need some law out here. I know them all pretty well. There are some people this joker can't buy. I got a field telephone in my car. I think we could all use a drink.
Old rocking chairs got me, my king by my side.
At 2 a.m., Henry Long, William T. Phillips, and I sat in the dining room at the Davenport, drinking whiskey.
Paul Robard had owned the salted mine. There was gold in it. It was ours. I knew William Powell's grandfather. He let me hide the gold there when I got back to America in 08. That was the gold that John Moriarty found. They employed me because they found my manuscript. They were able to figure out who I was. At first, I didn't realize it, and then they tried to blackmail me.
Well, you had to go and be a writer now, didn't you?
Hey, someone deserved to know what happened. I was just going to have it published upon my death.
Phillips was the golden goose. Robard, Moriarty, and Chance were blackmailing him, but they had an uneasy partnership at best. Robard was sleeping with Moriarty's wife, and Moriarty was plotting against Chance with Gus. Someone was bound to make a consolidation play. Moriarty was the first to jump. And Paul Robard went up to Big Bear with his wife. Moriarty had them tortured and killed. He talked Benny into bringing me in as the fall guy. I was supposed to stumble onto these murders and report Moriarty was dead, giving him time to get out of Dodge. Unfortunately for them, Janice Tomlinson gave me the right description of Moriarty. At that point, he knew the best way to keep his secret was to get rid of Chance. He promised Gus a big share in the Krypton Club. Did it seem illogical? Maybe. But if not for a few moving parts, it might have worked.
I couldn't be sure if you were in bed with them. After I left you at the hotel, Sundance was waiting for me with Janice. He told me who you really were. So, what's your next move, kid?
I've got to get back to Los Angeles. The DA's office there will want answers. Hopefully I won't lose my license.
We'll vouch for you as much as we can. If you do lose your license, maybe the three of us could go into business together.
And where would we go, Butch? Bolivia?
Hey, Bolivia worked for a while. Anyway, we've worn out our welcome almost everywhere. That's why we had to split up when we got back to the States. Don't worry, kid. Something will come up no matter what. Keep the manuscript. A lot of good it was doing me. Give me a call if anything. We'll put our heads together.
Same old Butch. You just keep thinking. It's what you're good at.
The two of them laughed out loud. Who would have thought that two of the most famous outlaws in the country could disappear and live honest lives for 25 years? I finished my drink and got up.
Hey, where are you going, Marlo? This party's just getting started.
Mr. Phillips and Mr. Long, my head is ringing, and I can still smell gunpowder. Tonight I killed a man in cold blood. Your nephew died too this week, Mr. Long. I saw a man with his genitals chopped off. And a woman tortured. I saw a nice kid with a bullet in his chest. Two other people die, including a clerk from this hotel.
Miles always was a crook. His father beat him badly when he was a kid. He never recovered. Last time I pulled strings to get anyone hired.
I haven't gotten a good night's sleep in a week. Something tells me it'll be a while before I get another. I think I should start trying right now.
Yeah, it'll never be easy, Marlo. But it does get easier.
Just remember to keep your friends close and keep your heart open.
You're still a romantic, Butch.
Always have been, always will be.
Thank you. You saved my life. And you taught me that heroes exist. Good people can live forever. Thank you both. Now, I must say goodnight.
Ah, come on, Marlo. One more drink, just one more.
Ah, leave him alone, Butch. The old man needs his beauty sleep.
I shook hands with him. As I walked out of the dining room, I looked back at the two old men. They had their arms around each other like schoolboys, leaning in to tell stories. Henry Long and William T. Phillips had more outstanding warrants than half the mobsters in Chicago. One winter day in college, while avoiding class, I read something about Phillips. A person said, "I wouldn't want to have been in the teller's cage when he came through the door of a bank. But if I ever met him in a saloon, I sure would have bought him a drink." I knew what that meant now. Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid were united once again. I walked up to my hotel room near the fire exit, waiting for the salmon carpet in the cream-colored hallway. It was quiet. This time, though, I didn't mind it. The door to my room was unlocked. I opened it slowly. There was a familiar scent inside. I switched on the light. Janice Tomlinson was sitting on the Davenport where she was the night before. This time, though, she was smiling. "Hi. I thought you'd be asleep."
"I did sleep for a while. First rest I've gotten in weeks. Did you have fun with the boys?"
"I did. Can you believe it? Tonight we were saved by two ghosts."
"You're smiling. I like your smile. Maybe someday I'll write a book about you. Philip Marlowe, the Slumming Angel."
"Will there be sordid tales?"
"The most sordid tales. But they do say that the truth is stranger than fiction. Hey, I made us a couple of drinks. Have a nightcap with me. Our first drink together when no one is trying to have us killed."
It's coming up on 3 a.m. I can barely stand. And we were both almost murdered tonight.
Well, Philip, that's true. But you said you'd do your best to help me, and you did. Let's toast to life.
She sipped her drink, then leaned over and kissed me. Oh, I kissed back. When we pulled away, we looked into each other's eyes. She smiled. I didn't get much sleep that night.
No one to talk with, all by myself. No one to walk with, but I'm happy on the shelf. A misbehaving, saving my love for you, for you, for you.
You've just heard a man named Marlowe, based on the character of Philip Marlowe, originally developed by Raymond Chandler. The complete cast for this series was Will Benson as Benny Chance, Christopher Bradley as Lou Parker and Gus, Javen Ivey as Joe Briggs, Dr. David Linton as William T. Phillips, Olga Lysenko as the telephone operator, Dan Mountain as Bernie Oles, Fernando Sanabria as the homicide detective, Brett Solomeni as Miles the desk clerk, Sam T. Wilson as Henry Long and William W. Powell Jr., with Nancy Pop as Janice Tomlinson, and Gustavo Rodriguez as John Moriarty. I'd like to thank the cast. They made this story come to life, and I'd especially like to thank you for tuning in to A Man Named Marlowe. Is this the last we've heard of Philip Marlowe? Well, that remains to be seen. If you want to speak with him, you can always dial Glenview 7537. I hear he could use the business. Be sure to subscribe to these podcasts on iTunes and everywhere you get your shows by searching for Breaking Walls or at thewallbreakers.com. If you've enjoyed A Man Named Marlowe, give a quick iTunes rating so more people can discover this show and Breaking Walls, the podcast on the history of American radio broadcasting. Episode 82 of Breaking Walls will premiere 8/1/2018 and focus on the state of the radio industry between 1932 and 45 as broadcasting booms while the world goes to war. To support these shows for as little as $1 per month, please go to patreon.com/thewallbreakers. My name is James Scully. Thank you for tuning in to A Man Named Marlowe, and I'll catch you on the flip side.
I don't stay up late, got no place to go. I'm home about 8, just me and my radio.